Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM KSLU. This is Experience Points. I'm MG.
And I am Will, and this is Southeastern Zone, 90.9 KSLU.
So we actually had a pretty eventful last week and the week before that. We've been off the air for 2 weeks, and we had a pretty good spring break.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we weren't on air was because we were attacked. We were on our vacation. We were attacked by pirates. And we had to spend roughly 2 weeks fending off pirates, fending off slave traders, and
many things that happened.
Through adaptability, though, we went ahead. We had to go through some save games. We had to backtrack a little bit.
I think you're thinking of Far Cry.
Is that the one where you go up on the towers and you turn things on and off on the towers and you hang glide? Is that the game? That is Far Cry 3.
I think you're confusing our entire vacation.
I didn't even take a vacation.
Me neither. No, think about it.
Yeah. Okay. So no, we were off because we were on a vacation. Even vacations we didn't take. However, though, later in the hour, we're going to talk about Tomb Raider, the new Tomb Raider, the reboot. Went ahead and played it, beat it, and got to say, my impression of the game. Go and buy it. Well, hold on. If there was a way to rent a game, install or play a game the entire way through for story and for content and then stop playing it, and, give it back without spending $60, then I would say do that, because I didn't do any of the multiplayer. I think the multiplayer is complete ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason like Uncharted has multiplayer.
Yeah, it's like
Tomb Raider has the same sort of multiplayer. But I've got to say,
story was good though.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess we could just talk about it now. Let's not even.
MG's review of the week.
Review. explosions. So way back in the day, again, you school yourself up on Tomb Raider, and you realize that whenever I was growing up and I was playing the original Tomb Raider games for PlayStation 1, that these games were good. They were really good. But you didn't know how bad it was. Back then, you see how it is now, and you're like, oh man, that you could totally tell that these people didn't spend a lot of time, making this game good or whatever. Mm-hmm. On some games, not Tomb Raider, on other games, like current gen PS3 games, you're like, oh, they went with the cartoony aspect or whatever. And then, but then you look back at like Tomb Raider 1, 2, 3, all the ones on PlayStation 1, and you're like, wow, that is a bunch of just tiny squares. That's polygons. You could see it. Everything's pointy and very rigidy. Rigid. Rigidity is not a word. The rigidity is huge. Huge rigidity.
Yes.
And you know the physics engines was very rudimentary. It was just really, really hard to. But you didn't notice. I guess it was hard to play, but it's hard to play now. It wasn't hard to play then because it was an accomplishment. Like, 15-year-old me, I'm trying to play this game, and if I jumped over the three-block chasm, I mean, I was flying high. So you look back on the gameplay, you look back on the look and the stylization, and it was very much in the sense of the 90s Duke Nukem. Mm. And again, Lara Croft was like the first female in video games.
She's for heroin.
She is the one that wasn't getting
the femme fatale.
Right. She. But then when you look back at it, again, this Lara Croft aside, the new one. If you look back at the old Lara Croft, like, she was like stone cold murderer. Like, she killed people in every game.
She wasn't feminine at all. Hardly.
It was no. She was. She like dressed up. Of course, they had a level where she was like wearing almost nothing or wearing a dress or whatever, and she got to do her own dance thing. But I mean, and they always put really feminine things in there. But that was what they were playing to. She was very much this like bad, just kicking butt every time.
Yeah.
Every time butt came around, she kicked it. It was that was how it was, and they did a really good job of keeping, I guess, the action that you remember. And they did a really, really good job of throwing away everything that you don't, or maybe that you do. That was really, really bad.
They did a very, very good job.
Yeah, so like, I'll rate it like this. Overall, I think it's probably 9.5 out of 10.
Really?
If you cut out the multiplayer. If you cut out the multiplayer, I really think 9.5 out of 10. I'll step down to 9 because some things do get a little repetitive, but I didn't spend time and master the game. Like, I didn't there's a few mechanics where wherein you can increase the levels of your gear. Mm-hmm. You can find salvage on this island. You're on this island. I guess I'll just give a real quick synopsis. You're on this island or you're on this ship and this all takes place via like an in-game video. You're going. Lara Croft is not a world famous explorer. She's like straight out of college, And her and a bunch of her friends, like one of her friends from college, like her best friend from college, a professor who's this like really dumb professor. He's like, he used to be an archaeologist in the field, but then he was a professor for so long, he kind of forgot about it, how to do it. And he's all about the stardom. And like, you know, a crew of obviously like one mentor, one really old guy, one like big kahuna type of fun-loving Hawaiian dude. Mm-hmm. And then one like, obviously she's like the second in command. This ragtag group of people on the ship are going out to find this her Lara Croft's best friend's like ancestor, like Japanese ancestor or whatever, who supposedly was like a queen way back in the day. And that plays, that's a story element later on in the game. But something happens, you decide that you want to that Lara Croft makes a decision that you should go into like this Bermuda Triangle-esque type of situation, like, oh, you know, crazy storms, dragon, I think it's called the Dragon's Triangle, the Dragon's Eye or something. Mm-hmm. You go into this bad bit of sea, right? And of course something happens, your ship is broken in half and beached and sunk, and it's you're thrown into the water.
It's the Bermuda Triangle of that area of the world, basically.
Right, yeah, it's over by Japan. And so then you wake up and you have to reunite with your people, and things just go downhill from there, and you have to survive the island. And the whole game takes place realistically in like 2 days. Like, really? The entire game is like 2 days worth of time. You use campfires to level up and save and do things like that. There's a salvage system on the island. There's salvage, you know, rusty pieces of metal that you can then, as you acquire gear, use that salvage, which really just is a number. You, if you get enough salvage, you can upgrade your gear. When the game allows you to upgrade it, you can just put money into or put salvage into it, so you can get a better bow, or you can increase the strength of your axe or whatever.
It's a very well-made game.
Well, it's got mechanics in it that allow you to increase it, but if you want it to be hard, you don't have to increase your gear. Like, you could have, you get a shotgun. The shotgun is just a regular old shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
It shoots. That's it. It shoots. It's inaccurate rather. It's really, really hard to use it. But you don't realize how inaccurate it is until you upgrade it and you realize, like, oh wow, now it's pretty much a sniper rifle. I mean, it's ridiculous. As far as the gameplay mechanic that allows you to upgrade your gear, fantastic. It wasn't too complex. It wasn't unnecessarily simple. It was really, really straightforward and intuitive. The best thing in the game, I guess, is the ability for it to drive the player into exploring the exploring the environment, but still maintaining that storyline element, that ability to push you in the right direction. And you know, if you're standing in front of a big open pit or a big open chasm with a couple zip lines, that was the thing. Zip lines are everywhere in this game. Like, there's a like a village on the island of you know people that are stranded there too, and they've like made zip lines. Everyone's an expert zipliner. You have to suspend reality for a second. But so, you know, you look at this big open chasm and you're like, oh, wow, this is great. You know, but you can get across this thing like one or two or three or four or like several different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that the gameplay in that it's a platformer, third person platformer.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Then it changes to QuickTime events, where you do a lot of different QuickTime event type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I don't like that. I liked it with Resident Evil 4, hate it with Resident Evil 5. I haven't played Resident Evil 6. A few other games decide to do QuickTime events. They are really, really bad. This one, not bad at all. It was really, really great.
Huh.
I thoroughly enjoyed pretty much, honestly, the music, the environment. I played it on PC, so the graphics were second to none.
Yeah.
In fact, they had this really cool thing. And normally, I'm not really big into these pieces of physics engines that you've never ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Like way back in the day, people thought PhysX by NVIDIA, or it wasn't by NVIDIA at the time, but PhysX was just going to pass by. You bought a dedicated physics card,
mm-hmm.
and you played with this physics engine, and it rendered all the physics off of the extra card, and not off your graphics card. So your graphics card was just all about making the graphics pretty.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do that now on a second graphics card. You don't need to buy a special card to do it. It has something, does something similar. It's a special technology if you have the powerful graphics card that can handle it. It's called TressX, TressFX. It is essentially, whenever you have a game and you have water physics or cloth physics, you know, how things bend and how things move when interacting with other parts of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Another really cool thing that people typically leave out is hair. You do not believe how difficult it is to render hair. I mean, most of the time, hair clumps together. Mm-hmm. But if it's not wet, if your hair is in the wind, your hair is not clumped together. It's all
it's
over
all
the place.
Stringy and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And for a female character with a lot of hair on her head, you know, typically in a ponytail or whenever she puts it up, it's in a ponytail, whenever she's letting it go down, and in a very windy type of environment, they capitalized on this software called TressX that allows, or TressFX, that allows it to individually render strands of hair.
So her hair looks crazy
her,
real.
Her hair looks, yeah, it looks exactly you ever, like you would expect hair to look.
Have you ever seen The Incredibles?
Yeah.
Do you ever think the hair in their movie was really, really, really well done?
Yeah, it was really, really well done.
I don't know what it was. Like, that's the one thing in that movie that I'm always like, dude, their hair in this movie looks so good.
Like, it's not quite that good. Like, it's, and again, like, I only have a 500 series graphics card, so I've got like a 570 classified. It can't push that much.
Yeah.
And it definitely bogged down a little bit with TressX or TressFX, but I did it. I left it on, and I, you know, I played with it for a little bit, and then I just turned it off and, you know, maximized my settings and played the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. Storyline, outstanding. Gameplay, outstanding. The only thing that I think would probably cut that half off or that one, you know, one full point off out of 10 is that it wasn't necessarily it wasn't really. I'm not saying it wasn't original. I'm saying that it was semi-predictable. That there were telltale signs, and it's almost like you can't do it. Like, you know, you have an idea of what's going to happen in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of things where you expect Lara Croft to die, but you know she's not going to.
Yeah.
You know that some people in your party are going to die because it would just be
because they're not Lara Croft,
right? Because they're not Lara Croft. But beyond that, like beyond the, I guess the fact that it's a third person action adventure platformer game, I mean, I get
definitely worth the buy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like it's the best Lara Croft game I've played. It's the best Tomb Raider game I've played. I guess second to this would probably be, I don't know, Last Revelations was pretty good. Tomb Raider 2 was pretty good.
So, after you beat the game, is it one of those free-roaming games where you can go around on the island after you
beat
everything?
Yeah, that's another really cool thing. It's open world after the fact, and I believe I was reading a review, and one guy, and I didn't realize it at the time, but one guy said, you don't realize it when you are playing the game because someone's always shooting at you, but once you have a moment to breathe, once you have a moment and you know what happened, and you decide that, you know, you're back on the island, you have a moment to really experience the beauty of the game.
It's really awesome.
This game didn't suffer any gaps in production money. It had a lot of money that went into it. It had a lot of art. It had a lot of sound. Had a lot of music. At no point did I almost forgot. Let's just put it this way. It was raining over the spring break, right? Mm-hmm. And it was raining pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I was in the house. I was playing this thing, and I had like the speakers cranked up. And it was raining, and then I played in the game. It had stopped raining for hours, and I was still playing this game. And I thought it was just as bad and stormy outside, and it was actually all the game.
Hmm.
It was just how immersive this game is. It's an extremely immersive experience.
It pulls you in, and it's an amazingly awesome game.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to be in the mood. You have to definitely like that type of game. If you like that type of game, then totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like that type of game, I'm sorry. You're probably not going to. You're probably not going to enjoy it that much. But
I might have to go check this game out.
I'm definitely going to. It's available on a few platforms. I think it's available on Steam, Origin, or maybe the GameStop, whatever the GameStop digital distribution
Uplay
thing is,
or whatever.
No, Uplay is Ubisoft.
Okay, so it's
available a couple of different places. I would be really, really hesitant on purchasing the game. Again, like, I have it, fine, sure.
If you can borrow it from a friend, do it.
Yeah, if you can borrow it from a friend, they haven't really put into place any type of measures to stop you from, like, transferring the game temporarily and activating it and then deactivating it and then reactivating it. They haven't done anything like that, to my knowledge. I gotta say though, after playing this game, like, I'm not gonna play a story-driven game for a while. Like, I'm gonna play a different type of game for the next review.
Because that's how much that you got out of it was like, okay, now I'm done with story games for a while.
No, not for a while. It's just it was very open and shut. Like, it left open. Obviously, they're gonna make a second one or another one. This was a true reboot. It wasn't a one-off. I believe it sold incredibly well. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of millions of copies.
It was like hyped up like crazy.
Yeah, they did. They did a lot of work to make this. And before, it's always been Lara's thing to carry like Desert Eagles, like these big Desert Eagle 45 ACP, type pistols. And in the old games, you didn't have ammo. Like you had in the pistols. The pistols were infinite ammo all the time, but they were like super low powered. So you get the pistols in this game. Like they make a little showing, but the most of the game you actually use it's either melee or it's a bow and arrow. No, a bow and arrow.
Oh,
yeah, that you actually you make progressively increase the stats on this bow and arrow because you're silent. And I feel like that's a combination
that is really
cool. Like Uncharted. It's a combination of Far Cry. It's a combination of Crysis. I mean, there's a ton of extra games that make an influence or that have an influence on Tomb Raider, and I really like that because it took the best out of some games like Uncharted. And don't get me wrong, I say Uncharted a lot. It took influence from Uncharted, but if you really want to get technical, Uncharted took influences from Tomb Raider 1, 2, 3, Last Revelation, and Chronicles. So it all comes back to what worked, what didn't, what mistakes were made, and are they going to make the same mistakes again? And I'm happy to say that Tomb Raider made very few mistakes, and I feel that the mistakes that it did make were purely more or less action-y, cinematic-y. Everybody almost has to make those mistakes in order to get past the point. It's like the elephant in the room. It's called hanging a lampshade. Whenever you hang a lampshade, it's like, all right, well, that's ridiculous, but we've noticed that it's ridiculous. Let's move on. And that's kind of how I feel. It did. Now it did have. It had a lot of puzzles in it, a lot of puzzles that were really, really cool. A lot of gear puzzles. A lot of replace this with that and turn something. And it makes this big elaborate scene. Though I think for next game, I'll probably maybe do like Kerbal Space Program or something. some open world. Yeah. In fact, I'll do Kerbal Space Program. I'll see. Or Kinetic Void or one of the Steam Greenlight games. Starforge maybe. We'll figure it out next week. But
so in summary of MG's review of the week, 9.5
review.
Out of 10. 9.5
out of 10.
Awesome game, but if you can borrow it from your friend, borrow it from a friend. Correct.
It's, if you're a fan of that type of game at all, then buy it and play it. But the problem that I'm facing is just that I don't feel the need to play the multiplayer. I feel like Lara Croft has always been, Tomb Raider's always been like about the story.
Assassin's Creed multiplayer, like why?
Yeah, like it feels like when we talked about this in the past, it feels like they threw it in just to have it
because every game
Halo
has
multiplayer. Everyone's got multiplayer. You already built the engine, might as well add 15 other dudes and have them fight or something. It's like Mass Effect 3's multiplayer. There's no real need to have multiplayer in Mass Effect. It doesn't do anything other than let you play 15 minutes of bite-sized Mass Effect.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the multiplayer was bad. I played a few rounds and it wasn't bad.
It's just not needed.
Yeah, it's completely unnecessary in my opinion.
Like you said that one time, we should have it where they divide the game into, oh look, here's a single player version for $20, here's the multiplayer that you can buy separate for $20 other, and then here's the expansion pack for $20 more, and in the end it's $60 altogether, but if you just want to play the single player, you can just buy the single player.
I think there's a market out there for microtransactions and free-to-play type of games like that. If you download it for the PlayStation 3 or for the PC or whatever, and you just want to play multiplayer, then maybe, not a monthly fee, because that doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
But, have some type of microtransaction way of doing it. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, I would say it's definitely worth it if you like those types of games. If you liked Uncharted, if you liked Crash Bandicoot, if you liked the original Tomb Raiders, or if you liked any platformer out there, you're going to really, really, really enjoy Tomb Raider. I can't really guarantee it. I just say like 9.5 out of 10. I'll go as far as to go down to a 9 out of 10 for the game.
Sweet.
Since we talked about Far Cry, can we play the Make It Bundem?
Sure.
Can we make it Bundem? We're gonna play the Damian Marley Skrillex remix of Turning Up the Bass. Make It Bundem. This is from Far Cry 3. I'm MG.
And I'm Will, and this is Southeastern Zone 90.9 KSLU.
Now greetings to the world, voice of the one big
player.
And we are back. I'm Will.
And I'm MG. And this is what you've heard about. This is what you waited for. This is what you woke up. You had your eggs and bacon. You had your little Spam sandwich for lunch. And now, this is your dinner.
Okay, I was not expecting you to do that.
We're for you.
I was like, what are you doing?
We kiss babies on the cheek. And they like it.
And this is Southeastern Zone, 90.9 KSLU.
That's the station we're on. Turn, look, oh, hold on. I'm sorry. Those songs get me so pumped. First
I was like,
off,
what are you doing?
Oh man, like I was listening to those songs and I'm like just doing this rocking motion with like
fist bumping.
Yeah, like fist into the wind on that one. Yeah, so
well, you could have seen him.
Anyway, whew, I need to lay off the energy drinks, man.
Anyways,
so we were talking during the break and we noticed that games are starting to get a little more of a voice, not really a voice. They're becoming more seen, more visual, especially free to play games.
More of a
like,
community, yeah.
Oh yeah, 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 like not StarCraft community. I was
telling him, like, I'm walking around campus and just recently, like, all of my friends randomly became interested in League of Legends and they just started playing. I know I talk about League of Legends every time I'm on the show, but anyways.
Well,
and
it's trying.
I mean, yeah.
It's got a fostering community out there that's
the
really
doing
its
best. Gaming community out of all
It's never going to beat Duke Nukem Forever.
It was the worst game. Anyways, we'll come back to that eventually. But anyways, basically, I'm just walking around campus, and I hear people like, oh, yeah, Teemo, and oh, yeah, Garen, and oh, yeah, blah, blah. I'm, like, sitting here going, whoa, wait a second. That was just talking about League of Legends, and these are people I don't even know. Like, I'm walking around campus, and everywhere I'm walking, I hear people talking about League of Legends, and I'm like, okay, Southeastern's campus is becoming League of Legends or something. Like,
well, you know,
it's everywhere, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
We didn't recently, but fairly recently, we've opened the ports. Or we've allowed connections to League of Legends.
Yeah.
So before it was like the only thing you could play is something hosted here. But mm-hmm. since a lot of games are hosting their servers on dedicated hosting, I know the university, but I mean a few other places, businesses for instance, or
yeah.
even some networks like I'm not sure if it's AT&T specifically, but some networks, they won't allow you to connect to external services like that, like aside from like web traffic, Facebook, databases, stuff like that. So it is a very specialized service, but we recently unblocked it and we weren't intentionally blocking it. We have a default deny all, like
it was just there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like the next day we saw like a spike in that traffic, like, oh, yeah, everyone's playing now. All of a sudden, they all know. Everyone can play. And, but, I mean, it's only been out for what, like 2 years?
It's only been, like, I've only known about it for at least, like, for about 2 years now. Like, I just started playing around 2 years ago. And now it's whatever, like, the most popular game in the whole world, and they have, like, seasons going on. And
I think it's
the
most popular free-to-play game. There's, again, like, I really...
I think it has more players than WoW, though.
What?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it has way more players than WoW.
I'll challenge that. We'll keep talking. We'll challenge this
later. I
think
League of Legends has around 20 million, and WoW only has around, like... 15 million active players or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. But
and, like, League of Legends is... Yeah, look, there it is. Bigger.
So, I mean, there are... Apparently, there are more daily players than in League of Legends than there are on...
The difference between a daily player and a...
someone who plays every day.
Everything. This is in Forbes. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, so... Apparently, it's got more people than Call of Duty as well, but...
Huh. Yeah, MG's actually looking at a page right now on the internet, and it says,
This was last year.
Oh, this is last year.
Yeah.
It says, League of Legends bigger than WoW, more daily players than Call of Duty, whatever that means. But, yeah, like basically, you know, like it even describes League and everything here. So, I mean, but all I'm saying is if you want to play a fun game, you should play League of Legends because, I mean, hey. And that's one thing that's really good about League, actually, is whenever you want to play a game, whenever you, like, queue up to look for a game, because, like, on Call of Duty, when they have the lobby, you queue up to look for a game, and it's, like, a minute or two before you find one.
Yeah.
On League, it has a little timer, and usually it only gets to around, like, 10 seconds at the most, and it instantly finds a game, and then you play, and you're in a game, like...
The architecture is very... Or, the, I guess, the structure that they have everything set up with...
It's very well made.
Very well made, yeah. Top tier, and I'm actually... You notice, like, it's making such a big impact that... Dota 2, which kind of Dota started the League of Legends thing. Warcraft 3 started the Dota thing.
Yeah. And then Blizzard started all of
that. And Blizzard started all of that, but now Blizzard's coming back with their own free to play game. It's like Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, I'm not in the beta. I want to be in the beta. We have someone who is, he's looking forward to it. The other half of Cap and MG, we got Cap. He's looking for he's so stoked about getting into this game. He can't wait. He's been like making decks. He was telling me about it yesterday.
I've seen the card game stuff on the like all over the web, internet, and everything.
He played the real like legit card game, and it's to the point now like he is so ready. He's like, I want to play as Garrosh or I want to play as Rexxar, and he's like telling me about it. I'm like, well, you know, we'll get him on the show if and when. He doesn't need to get in the thing to you know
so,
get on the show.
I haven't really looked at it much. Is it in the Warcraft like universe? Like all the people from WoW?
All people from WoW.
Oh wow!
And it's like the big name people in WoW.
But when you said Garrosh. I was like thinking like, whoa, Garrosh Hellscream?
Yeah, it's like Garrosh. I think Janna Proudmoore's in it. There isn't, I don't know how far it's going to get into the lore, if it's actually going to be.
Do you know what exactly, like how it's based? Is it like, what exactly kind of game is it?
It's a card game. I mean, it is definitely.
Wait, it's not going to be like a actual game?
No, I think there's a level of gaminess to it.
Time to look up something else.
Yeah, it's looking really, really awesome as far as how it's presenting itself.
But so you said you're trying to get into the beta, and so that means there's actually is a game.
I'm sorry. It's an online. Well, it's not an online. It's a free to play type of game that will allow you to play on an iPad. I think it'll do iPad, iOS. You'll get.
Oh,
you
so
know.
It revolves around the cards, basically, though.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. It's a card game, but it's not a card game. It's a game.
That is really cool.
It's a game of strategy, and it's a game of I don't know how to really say it. It's you play in an arena, but the arena is really just the top of a table. You know, it just looks nicer. Yeah. And
so you can play with cards, or you can play on the. That's really cool.
Yeah,
that's
I think
cool
it's.
That they do that.
I think it's going to. Yeah, it's coming out on so Windows, Mac, and
brand
iPad.
Brand new style of game, kind of type thing, almost in a sense.
Well, I feel way back in the day, they had this game for the PlayStation 3. It was called Eye of Judgment, and mm-hmm. it came packaged, or you could get a packaged version with the PlayStation Eye, and you need that now for PlayStation Move. But it was just a webcam. It's like a special webcam for PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
And what you would do is you would set it up and you'd point it at a table, and then you'd put these cards down that came with the game, mm-hmm. and you put the game in. And the game would recognize these little symbols on the back of the cards. We know it today as augmented reality. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So whenever you play a card game or a card down, it would be like, oh, well, there's that symbol. And it would throw a 3D model superimposed on the card on the screen.
The 3DS does that. They
right.
That is the coolest thing ever. I'd never seen it before.
It
3DS.
Failed, though. The Eye of Judgment version failed.
Really?
And well, some people say they didn't want to buy, $70 for $20 worth of game and then $50 worth of camera.
Yeah.
Because they're only going to do this with a camera. There was a lot of, there was a lot of up and downs with it, but that's kind of, that was the first real, they've had card games before that. Don't let me, try to lie to you or whatever. They had card games, they pre-existed, but I feel like this is the next step. We're taking a free-to-play type of thing. I'm sure there'll be microtransactions. I'm sure there'll be ways for you to play Diablo or play World of Warcraft or StarCraft and then mm-hmm. somehow take your accomplishments in there and apply them, or maybe even vice versa, apply your accomplishments from the card game into those other games, or from those other games into the card game.
That'd be really, really, it, really cool.
I have a feeling that they're creating an ecosystem of Blizzard games. They've already done it with Battle.net,
mm-hmm.
but they're creating an ecosystem of games that will allow players to really capitalize on playing games and not playing disjointed games. Disjointness in games is, I'm playing Tomb Raider. Oh, then I'm playing Kerbal Space Program. Then I'm playing Minecraft. And none of the games talk. Mm-hmm. All of the games are
separate.
Very distinctly. Yeah, they're completely separate. Versus, StarCraft, if you are in a StarCraft game, you could at least talk to people in WoW.
Yeah, they have the whole,
the Battle.net. The real ID and the Battle.net system. So what I imagine is, whenever you get an achievement in something, you could also get an achievement for the achievement in another game. You can it's all bridged and it mm-hmm. shares information. And I feel that whenever you put a really good or a really large, at least, they got to be, big before they can be,
you're talking about Blizzard?
Good. Yeah. You get a really big company like Blizzard who has a lot of money and they start doing something, they start integrating and tightly knitting everything together, the authenticator
mm-hmm.
and your account manager and everything for the. Let's just be realistic. StarCraft II, Diablo III, and World of Warcraft are three of the largest games ever.
Mm-hmm.
Of three of the largest universes ever, and they're all made by the same people. Mm-hmm. And they're all—you never hear about WoW servers getting hacked or Diablo III servers getting hacked, or StarCraft II servers getting hacked. That's because they make it their point. We don't get hacked.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling that with that dedication, with that dedication, that team, then we're not going to have anything to worry about this game. It's going to be quality. Even mm-hmm. if it's not your thing, it's still worth trying.
Yeah.
And same league with League of Legends. I'm not trying to hate on League of Legends. I don't have to like it, but League of Legends is here to stay for a while.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I'm hoping.
But so they're trying to get it on ESPN. Did you hear about that?
No.
They're actually trying to get it on ESPN because they actually have legitimate teams and seasons now.
Wait, ESPN does sports? I thought it was just SportsCenter.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, every time I turn on ESPN, it's just SportsCenter. That's all I ever see on ESPN.
That's what I'm saying. They're trying to get it on SportsCenter.
Oh,
type stuff.
Okay, okay.
I know it's going to be kind of a weird, oh, well, the Ravens beat. Oh, speaking of the Ravens, we also have this curse gaming team that, like, I don't know, like, it wouldn't, like, I know that'd sound weird if they went from football to League of Legends or something like that, but they're actually trying to get it on one of the ESPN channels because of the fact that they have seasons and they have, like, pro players and everything, and they have positions that they play in League and all this other stuff.
I have a feeling that,
that's never going to happen, probably.
I have a feeling that Twitch TV just needs to get their own channel.
Yeah, that's and that's the thing with the Ouya, they're going to be able to do that.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that'll be
that
really
should be coming in. That should be coming in soon.
Yeah, when is it going to be done? I've been really looking
forward
to it.
So it's done. They're shipping. And it just takes like 60 days from fully shipping. So it'll be here. Like, I'll bring it up here and we'll play. It'll be great. What we're actually going to talk about Kickstarter in the next segment.
And they're making the Steam Box.
Steam Box is going to be cool.
It's going to be stupid expensive, though.
So, well, it depends. It depends on what it can do. And if I know it's the Tegra. And I really believe in the Tegra. I think it's the Tegra.
I don't know.
I believe in the Tegra architecture, but at the same time, it's not like you spend $600 on something. If it stays current, like, for instance, I spent $600 on the PS3, it is still the game system that I'll play more than the Xbox or the Wii.
Yeah.
I'm on the note of the Wii, I'm still plugging through Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
It's just so much easier. Well, I'm still on Skyward Sword.
The first one.
Yeah, it's so much easier to play on my computer than it is to play on the game console.
Yeah.
It's just so, I don't know, keyboard and mouse are way easier to me. But
that's exactly what I always say, and everyone's like, no, you're dumb. Controllers are better.
It depends. Like, I think if you had a good PC experience when you were growing up, then it works out if you had a good console, and that's the deciding factor. But
I have to ask you a question real quick since we're talking about do you move with WASD? The arrow keys, like, that sounds like a noobish thing to say, the arrow keys, or do you move with ESDF?
So ESDF is actually a better combination, and I know that because your pinky can now reach Q, W, and A versus having shift and tab and control.
Yeah.
And the pinky's not so far away from control, shift, and tab, and God forbid caps lock or that tilde if you want to do console. You know, it's so close that it's pretty easy, and your index finger can always go to the home key on the F, that little notch on the keyboard. But I don't typically do that because you have to reset those controls in every game you play.
Yeah.
Typically, it's a WASD. It's WASD.
Yeah.
And I only do that because I don't want to reset all the controls in a game. Mm-hmm. But there are some games where I make an exception. If there's a game that I'm really going to dedicate time to and master, and I'm going to spend, let's just be, you know, realistic, 40 to 50 hours playing this game, then I'm not going to kill myself. I'm going to set it to ESDF.
Mm-hmm.
And I even at one point, I was playing a game where I used my thumb to hit L. I had some special.
That is weird.
It was way out there, but it's not so bad with your thumb. You can't comfortably hit Control and L at the same time, but you can comfortably hit ESDF and then L at the same time. With it. It was a special. I can't remember if it's Free Space or Free Space 2. It was some game that was just really, really hard. We're gonna talk about Kickstarter specifically the Pebble Watch that I received.
Dude, you have one?
I'm wearing it right now.
No.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about that in the next segment. After Throwing Fire by Ronald Jinkies. This is Southeastern Zone 90.9 FM KSLU. I'm MG.
And I'm Will, and this is also Experience Points.
Southeastern Zone 90.9 FM KSLU. I'm MG.
And I'm Will, and this is Southeastern Zone 90.9 KSLU.
So, on experience points, we try to do our best to get, like, the latest and greatest geeky stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the best avenues to get that, you really want to see where the community is going, is a place called Kickstarter. Again, like, Kickstarter doesn't give us money to talk about Kickstarter. It's more or less it's just really cool. I'm sorry, it's a really cool place.
It's just us helping you out.
Yeah, yeah. Like we talk about things like the Ouya and the Pebble Watch. And we talk about things like the Raspberry Pi and just really cool geeky, techie, gadgety type stuff.
What is the Raspberry Pi?
We'll talk about that in a minute. In fact, I'm glad you asked, Will. So we talk about all this cool stuff, and a lot of it comes from Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a place where you can kickstart a project, you're a backer, and you get rewards, predefined rewards for backing the project. So one of these, in particular, one of these projects that I backed over a year, or almost a year ago, it was in August, was the Pebble Watch. And the Pebble Watch is they're a company now, but is from a couple of college engineers.
Yeah.
And they made this watch for the BlackBerry a long time ago. But it didn't really, it's a BlackBerry watch, what do you want?
Yeah.
And then they put this Kickstarter up saying, hey, we want to do an e-ink. So it actually uses really low-energy electronic ink. We want this e-ink displayed type of watch that's Bluetooth compatible with your phone. So whenever you get a message, whenever you get a phone call, whenever you need to do something within respect to you know, getting notifications or changing music or whatever on your phone, on your Android or iPhone device, let's go ahead and we want to make that product. And
yeah, it looks really
if,
nice.
If you want to go ahead and, you know, back $115 or $110 or whatever, then we'll send you one whenever we have it. They wanted, I think, $100,000. It was not a, I mean, it was compared to what they got, it was not a lot of money, right? So they wanted that. And then they got over a million. Yeah, they got over $10 million. There was a $100,000 asking price. They got 68,929, so almost 69,000 people to say that they want this thing. And they got, of their $100,000, they got $10,266,845. They ridiculously blew it out of the water. It was so funded. I think it was the most funded Kickstarter ever. And I went in there. Some people were able to get it for $99. I actually went in there for $115, and me and 40,798 other people, and we bought or pledged to get a Pebble watch. Now the problem is when you first back this, it says like estimated delivery September 2012 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't anticipate they were going to get, you know, almost 69,000 orders. They were thinking maybe like more along the lines of, they were barely going to break even. They were barely going to break that.
Yeah.
So when they got all of those orders, they were severely backlogged. So I only just got this 2 weeks ago, right before spring break, in fact. But, I mean, it's great. It is. It fits most watch bands. I think it's a one-inch watch band or a three-quarter-inch watch band. It is
really nice and comfortable.
Very good on. It's pretty comfortable. It does. I mean, it is plastic, and I would like everyone to go look online and see it. But the cool thing is, you get different watch faces. It has a biking computer built in via an update. You'll be able to code for it if you'd like. You'll be able to make your own watch faces if you want, if you have the knowledge to do so. And it opens up a lot of avenues to increase your productivity. I don't take my phone out. Everyone has a phone. No one wears a watch anymore unless you're going somewhere, you know, to show off the watch. I don't take my phone out to check my messages anymore. I don't take my phone out to change the track on my iPod or on my iPhone. I just do it on the watch. I mean, it's incredibly nice, and it does help you save the battery on your phone. I've noticed that I get about 10 to 15% more battery life on my phone.
Really?
Because I'm not taking it out and turning it on just to change the track or just to change, you know, just to look at the time. So it's a lot of screen time that is not on. The cool thing about e-ink is that when it's not being changed, when it's not being directly updated, it uses very little electricity to keep that ink on there. So it's like the Kindle. The Kindle and the original Nook, they used e-paper. E-paper and e-ink aren't the same, but they're more similar than not.
Mm-hmm.
It's an LED display with
e-ink. I was looking at that, and I was like, it actually kind of looks like the Kindle in a way, but at the same time, it's really awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
This is really cool.
I like it anyway. So
it's definitely a lot cheaper, I would say, than the iWatch or whatever is going to be.
Yeah, but it's probably not going to be... It's probably not going to be that good. Like, to be honest, the iWatch or whatever Apple puts out, I am highly... I'm not an Apple fanboy, but I recognize that when someone spends a lot of money on something, to develop something, it's going to have more quality than someone who doesn't spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's just how it goes.
So you think the Apple iWatch can be a lot better than this then?
Yeah, but here's what everything is sort of going towards. Kickstarter is the type of place you want to watch when you want to see the direction something's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine the people that, you know, stock market people watch Kickstarter and Indiegogo and things like that because they want to see what is hot, what is popular, and what companies should they buy stock in, or what should they anticipate is going to be really, really good selling in the near future?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel Kickstarter really is, because as soon as Kickstarter funded, as soon as this was fully funded and it became a huge thing, there were like two or three interpretations of an iWatch, of a watch that does relatively the same thing.
Yeah.
And then everyone starts saying like, oh yeah, you know, we're doing that. Google Glasses. Google Glasses don't go on Kickstarter, but other people are trying to make Google, you know, their versions of Google Glasses. And the same thing with the Ouya. The Ouya is a tiny little Android-based, you know, video game console that runs Android 4, I think 4.2 or 4.3. Anyway, there's a few people out there trying to make their own versions of that.
So and the Kickstarter definitely has a big say in a lot of things that come into the actual, the, even like the big giant companies.
Yeah, indirectly, it is a really powerful platform, and completely directly, it is what the consumers on Kickstarter, or the backers on Kickstarter, really want. Mm-hmm. And if everyone came in and they were like, "Oh, I would buy that." If you put your money down and it doesn't get funded, it's not like you lost your money. You get your money back. It's not even taken out until the thing becomes successfully funded. And there are mechanisms in place to prevent fake projects from being created and bogus products from being made and sent. So you won't spend $100 on something, and if it never gets made, you just lose that $100. They have to refund, or they have to make good on the product.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some reassurance there. I feel that that's really cool. Now, to answer your question, the Raspberry Pi is something that I'm going to be bringing in here next week and talking about. It is a $35 computer.
What?
It is a computer that has HDMI. It does HDMI video. It runs Linux. It runs off of an SD card. It's really quick. It's an ARM-based board.
Huh.
It's got two USB. You power it via a USB, like the Android, the micro USB. Power it via that. It's got Ethernet. It's compatible with Wi-Fi, like a Wi-Fi dongle.
Mm-hmm.
It's got stereo out, and it's got RCA, that little yellow cable, so you can hook up directly to any TV that has those ports.
Wow!
And you can have you can make your TV smart. You can install XBMC, or I plan on doing some AirPlay stuff with it.
It runs Linux, and you can open the internet and do anything on it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, in fact, you can run a ton of. Yeah, you've heard about like the Arduino, like it's a microprocessing board that it has a bunch of pins, analog and digital pins, and if you know how to do it, you can attach things like motors and cameras and stuff, and it can mess with them like that.
It's very open ended.
Right. So the Raspberry Pi is a better version of what I feel that they were trying to do. Regardless, it's $35, and for $35. And a little bit of time, like I'm talking about, like, you know, 5 minutes to install the version of Linux. It's called Raspbian.
Mm-hmm.
To install Raspbian, you get like full console. You get, you know, the ability to be Linux, but at the same time, you get, you know, a video player. You get internet. You get the ability to go to YouTube. You get, you know, if all you're gonna do is go to Facebook and you want something that I got a virus on it. Well, just reflash it. Mm-hmm. Then that's fine. That's more than adequate, and it's $35. I'm to the point where I've almost emulated like Windows 7, Windows 8 on it.
Really?
Yeah. Like you set up some Windows 7 and Windows 8. Again, this is kind of off topic. Windows 7, Windows 8 are rendered on a more powerful computer somewhere else, and then these Raspberry Pis, it's called a thin client, where they're really not that powerful, but all they do is connect a mouse and a keyboard and show the screen. But the power is somewhere else, so it's like wireless computing, sort of.
That's really
you do
really
all the
cool.
You do all the heavy grunt work on a powerful computer or a virtual machine, and then you just show it on the other one.
Hmm.
But yeah, so Kickstarter gets a lot of stuff out there. The Pebble, complete success. I wear this thing every day, and I used to not wear watches at all.
How long have you had it?
About 2 weeks.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's waterproof up to 30 feet, I think, 30 meters maybe, whatever 5 atmospheres is.
5 atmospheres.
Well, that's Atmos, yeah.
Yeah.
But no.
That
so
is really,
it,
awesome.
It is definitely a nice little piece of hardware, and they're taking pre-orders because they're still fulfilling their backing, their backer, you know, whatever the promises to backers to back for them. But
yeah.
So cool things. We are going to talk about. I really like the idea of doing Kerbal Space Program. For next week. It's not like a game you
exactly
can really beat.
Yeah, what is that?
Okay, all right. Whoa, he's inexperienced. Oh, he's inexperienced. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Kerbal Space Program is this awesome little program where you get these little dudes called Kerbals, and they're on this planet Kerbin, excuse me.
Man, they're really creative with their names.
Let's just say this. It's pretty awesome, right?
KSP.
The Kerbals, yeah, it's called KSP. The Kerbals are these cute little dudes.
Oh, I've seen this.
And they fly. They recently started a space program, and they fly to other places. Like they go to the Mun, the M-U-N, I guess it's the moon. And you can go to all these different places, Minmus and Ike and Eve. And, yeah, there are a ton of planets and there's the sun. And you build, essentially you build a shuttle or a type of rocket. You've got all these pieces and it's like Legos. And you just build rockets.
Yeah.
But things like drag and you have separations. It's not the easiest thing.
Huh.
It's not... I wouldn't say it's the hardest thing in the world, but it is not the easiest thing in the world, too. Some people have made some ridiculous like ships out of these, out of the pieces. And
wow.
Again, you could do like space planes, and you can have separation, and it's just completely crazy.
It looks like a really cool and creative game.
Yeah, they have the demo. The demo is available online. I think it's like $12 otherwise.
You fight against stuff? Or?
No, you don't really fight against it. What you do right now, yeah, it's $23 American dollars. But it's now greenlit on Steam. So
what does that mean?
So Steam has a program called Greenlight.
Yeah.
Steam Greenlight. And any community indie program that is, it's almost like Kickstarter for Steam, honestly.
Oh, okay.
Anything that is really, really
popular.
Popular can be added to Steam, and if it gets enough ads individually, Steam will say, okay, we'll go talk to the developers, they'll talk to them, and then the digital product will then be managed by Steam. So these people, you know, whether it's whoever makes KSP or Starforge or whatever, Kinetic Void, they don't have to worry about hosting it. Steam will take care of that.
Wow.
And Steam will manage updates, and all they ask is for, I think, a little bit in the way of profits from buying it online.
That's really cool.
But it takes a ton of time and a ton of dedication away from the developer, hassle away from the developer,
yeah,
so they can just focus on
crazy amount.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's a little insane. We are out of time. We're going to end out the hour with Never Surrender by Martin O'Donnell. Marty O'Donnell, as his friends call him.
Sweet.
This is from Halo. I think it was from Halo 2.
Yeah.
It's the one with Cortana. It's pretty cool. And if we have time, I'd rather Eat Randy by Julian Smith.
Yay!
We love that song. I've been MG. I guess I'm still MG.
I've been MG.
I've been, and now I currently am, and in the future I probably still will be MG.
Okay, well, I'm Will.
He's Will.
And this has been Experience Points, and it's also been fun. Sorry about last week not having a show, but in the end, everyone was enjoying spring break, so yeah. And this has been Southeastern Zone 90.9 KSLU.